realizes the efficiency, the necessity of the way of it, how full it is, how rich, beyond any concept she could have of what it should be. In that realization, her life is always renewed. She herself is the way of it, always opening to what comes, always contented.
Be like the Tao. It can't be approached or withdrawn from, benefited or harmed, honored or brought into disgrace.
My husband told me about Socrates. Socrates said, "If I'm wise, the only reason is that I know I don't know." I love that. I love that Socrates helped people question their beliefs and that when the time came for him to drink the hemlock, he did it cheerfully. He wasn't scaring himself or making himself sad like his dear unconscious disciples by projecting a non-existent past onto a non-existent future. He wasn't identifying with a body. When mind leaves the body, we throw it in the ground and walk away. He understood that whatever happens, reality is good. That would bring cheer to anyone's heart. I don't know a thing about his philosophy, but Socrates seems to me like someone who was loving what is. When your heart is cheerful and at peace, it doesn't matter what you do or don't do, whether you live or die. You can talk or stay silent, and it's all the same. Some people think that silence is more spiritual than speech, that meditation or prayer brings you closer to God than watching television or taking out the garbage. That's the story of separation. Silence is a beautiful thing, but it's no more beautiful than the sound of people talking. I love it when thoughts pass through my mind, and I love it when there are no thoughts. Thoughts can't ever be a problem for me because I have questioned them and seen that no thought is true. If you learn to meditate, the mind becomes quiet. You can become very calm, and then it can happen that when you're back in your ordinary life and you get a parking ticket, wham, you're upset. It's easy to be spiritual when things are going your way. When thoughts are simply observed and not investigated, they retain the power to cause stress. You either believe your thoughts or you don't. There's no other choice. They're like someone whispering to you. You aren't really listening, so you don't react. But if you hear that person loud and clear, you can't disregard what he's saying, and you may react to it. With inquiry, we don't just notice our thoughts. We see that they don't match reality. We realize exactly what their effects are. We get a glimpse of what we would be if we didn't believe them. And we experience their opposites as being at least equally valid. An open mind is the beginning of freedom. You can't let go of a stressful thought because you didn't create it in the first place. A thought just appears. You're not doing it. You can't let go of what you have no control over. Once you've questioned the thoughts, you don't let go of it. It lets go of you. It no longer means what you thought it meant. The world changes because the mind that projected it has changed. Your whole life changes, and you don't even care because you realize that you already have everything you need. This goes beyond simple awareness. You meet your thoughts with understanding, which means that you can love them unconditionally. And until you deeply see that not even thoughts exist, you may spend your whole life controlled by them or struggling against them. Just noticing your thoughts works while you're meditating, but it may not work so well when you get the parking ticket or when your partner leaves you. Do you just notice your feelings without a residue? I don't think so. We're not there until we are. When we go inside and truly meet those thoughts with understanding, the thoughts change. They're seen through. And then if they ever rise again, we just experience clarity, a clarity that includes everyone.
Let go of fixed plans and concepts, and the world will govern itself.
When you follow the simple way of it, you notice that reality holds all the wisdom you'll ever need. You don't need any wisdom of your own. Plans are unnecessary. Reality always shows you what comes next in a clearer, kinder, more efficient way than you could possibly discover for yourself. Last week in Copenhagen, I bought a black eye patch to rest my right eye when it hurts. My pirate costume. My eyes are seeing less for longer periods of time, and the pain has increased. The cells in my corneas seem to be dying at a very fast rate. I'm excited to find out what blind people know. The kindness of a world without vision. How the other senses become more acute. How the hands learn to feel their way. How ready friends and strangers are to help. It turns out that I may or may not go blind. Before I left for my summer tour in Europe, a specialist told me that there is such a thing as cornea transplant surgery. Good. One moment there's no cure, and the next moment there is. He said that I wouldn't be a candidate for another 4 or 5 years. Good. Stephen does some research and learns that if I'm going to have surgery, the sooner the better. Good. I'll be able to see with new eyes. He does more research, and we learn that the surgery has repercussions. Uncomfortable stitches in the eyes and 12 to 18 months recovery time. I hear from a woman who still has 6 stitches in her eye after 16 months, 20, 500 vision, and a lot of pain. Good. I can do that. People say, Katie, stop traveling the world. Is that the way of it? Who knows? Success or no success with the surgery, whether my body rejects the new cornea or accepts it, whether I see or not, I have no experience with traveling under such circumstances. Reality will let me know. What it shows me for the present is to keep moving. Now through the internet, Stephen discovers that there's a new kind of cornea transplant surgery, cutting edge, he says with a smile, called DSEC. And the leading practitioner is Dr. Mark Terry in Portland, Oregon. It's a 1-hour procedure with no stitches, or 2 or 3 at most, that transplants just the endothelium, the inner layer of the cornea, and it has a recovery time of weeks or less. Good.